Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
St. Adams here from the Wednesday Night Wix Show, here to tell you about the new aviation t-shirts available now at warbirdradio.com/deals. Click on the Wright Brothers catalog link. There are lots of great t-shirts to choose from, like the classic World War II Flying Tigers, Tuskegee Airmen, and the ever-popular P-51 Mustang, as well as many other fun aviation designs. Talk to you next Wednesday evening on the Wix Warbird Weekly Live Show, and hopefully you'll be listening wearing your new Aero-style t-shirt. Visit warbirdradio.com/deals now and check out the all-new Wright Brothers catalog.
Attention aviation and scale modeling enthusiasts worldwide. Hi, I'm Hawkeye, host of the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour. Tune in as we discuss topics related to plastic scale modeling, tips, techniques, products, events, as well as interviews and conversation with our special guests. Listeners will be able to call in with their comments live by phone or using our live chat room. The Plastic Scale Modeling Hour comes your way weekly, every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern here on WarbirdRadio.com.
Hi friends, Matt Jolly here to tell you about a special offer from my friends at Aero Cinema. Just log on to warbirdradio.com/deals and watch for free Aero Cinema's new feature presentation on Scott Yoke's P-51 Quicksilver. Inside you'll find a special Aero Cinema subscription rate that's so good, I'm not allowed to say it on the air. So click on warbirdradio.com/deals, that's warbirdradio.com/deals, and watch Quicksilver for free, plus receive that special offer from Aero Cinema. Just remember, warbirdradio.com/deals.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Man Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
If you're landing at DCA, be sure to wave. This is Warbird Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Zane Adams coming to you live on WarbirdRadio.com. Welcome to the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. Coming to you, of course, live. This is April 25th, 2012. And if you're listening to us now, we are live. If you're listening to the podcast later, we understand that as well. But we appreciate you downloading the podcast and listening later. The phone lines are open tonight, 478-787-4768. And Skype is open at Warbird Radio. We are here, ready to talk. We've got a special guest tonight. We got some exciting things going on this weekend here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we'll be getting to that here soon. But first off, just welcome everybody. And here at the bottom half of the hour, I might have a little open line time if our guest and I run out of steam. And you guys are welcome to call in. Again, 478-787-4768. We've got the live chat window open at warbirdradio.com. Just click on the Join Our Live Chat link right below the Listen Live button. And we're in here talking. There's several of us in here, and we're ready to go. But exciting week in Warbirds. I know the air shows are up and running. There's several air shows going on across the South. I imagine the air shows are going to start moving further north as the weather warms up. And it was a beautiful weekend last weekend. I know the Wings of Liberty air show over at Barksdale Air Force Base. The F-4 from the Heritage Flight flew with that's the Air Force F-4 with Heritage Flight flew with the Lone Star Flight Museum, P-47, seen pictures of that. It is a beautiful, beautiful deal. Dice Air Force Base show is next weekend there in Abilene, Texas. Haven't really looked at the air show calendar to see what else is going on. I know Matt Jolly was up in Louisville, Kentucky, and they had a great air show. I think they had, 750,000 people or 800,000 people there along the river in Louisville watching the air show. That's a really unique situation. They got big cities on both sides of the river up there, and I know Matt had a good time, and they broadcast that air show live on their local TV and radio stations, so to give everybody within 7 miles of up and down the river, apparently, the ability to hear and listen in and see what's going on at the air show. So that's a really unique event, and one of those events you'd really, if you're in the area, it would be a shame to miss it, because look for it coming up next year. It's pretty neat deal. So local happenings, I know here in the Texas Warbird reporter. I know the Lone Star Flight Museum's up and running. Like I said, they were at Barksdale this weekend. I know the Cold War Air Museum, they had some guys over at Barksdale and going to be over at Abilene this weekend as well with their new jet team, the Red Steel jet team. And so they're up and running. Their MiG-23 is not up and running. They've still got some maintenance issues. That's a, you know, tough deal to get flying is a MiG-23 in civilian hands. It's almost like flying the F-4 in the Collings Foundation, so there's always some teething problems, so it won't be there as was advertised, but they'll have the jets there. Maybe the Hind will be there, so it should be exciting. But the news, the big things that went on here this weekend, we went to bring my guests in here. Don Obreiter, who is the man, the chief of the B-24, B-29 squadron of the Commemorative Air Force. Don, are you here with us?
Yep, I'm here, Zane. Happy to be here.
Hey, well, thank you for coming on tonight, Don. And you had a busy weekend unveiling the new Diamond Lil over there at the Cavanaugh Museum in Addison. And I know it was good to see you. I know we didn't have a chance to talk. I mean, man, there was a lot of people there. And I know
well,
you
that's
guys
good. That's what we were hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard the count was up around, 80-something folks there for the unveiling? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's about what I heard, too. Yeah, it was a great turnout.
Yeah. There was a ton of people there for the unveiling. And then you guys had ground school going on, and that's an annual CAF wing member ground school going on. Is that right?
Yeah, for the B-24, it was ground school that weekend as well.
Yeah, and B-29 maintenance. Fifi was there as well, so it was good to see both of the airplanes there. But, you know, a lot of people out there know Diamond Lil, and I know you're the kind of the resident historian for the wing there. So if you could go through a little bit, just tell us, you know, what happened this weekend. Tell us about the Diamond Lil, a little bit of the process and a little bit of the history of the airplane we'll get into in a second. But, you know, tell us a little bit about the unveiling and what happened this weekend with the airplane.
Well, the unveiling was a really big deal. You know, Diamond Lil, she's been around for a long time, and this Liberator has actually spent most of her life as Diamond Lil. So in the progression of just trying to keep improving on the airplane and keep strengthening the CAF, it was time and it made sense to bring back Diamond Lil, but we just didn't want to bring back the usual Diamond Lil. We wanted to bring back something new and updated, but still carry that same legacy in the same heritage, you know, that the CAF started back in 71 with Diamond Lil. And that was the intent behind this, to where, again, to keep up the reconfiguration that Gary Austin spearheaded back in 2007, and then just to kind of keep the momentum going.
Yeah, it was good to see her back in. I know Diamond Lil, I mean, the airplane itself was Diamond Lil for longer than it was in service with the Air Force. Well, of course, it was never with the U.S. Air Force, but as long as it was Diamond Lil longer than it was in military service. You know, and I know its military service was very short. It was sold to the British and then had its incident, but then it, you know, went through a couple other owners and then with the CAF. But I mean, it's been with the CAF since, 1970, I think. Is that right?
Well, it's actually before that. They T-Max actually loaned it to the CAF back in, it was actually 1967, until then eventually the CAF took ownership of it, would be May of 1968. And it was in 71 when she was actually put in the colors of the 98th Bomb Group and given the name Diamond Lil. So, yeah, she's been with it as the CAF, meaning, you know, for 44 years. And again, what's it been, 36 of those years is Diamond Lil. So, she needed to come back.
Yeah, and our friend, Warbird Radio friend Gary Velasco did the nose art. And the nose art looks great. I think it's a beautiful representation. It's large on the side of the airplane. It's going to be, I think, it'll be a hit at the air shows. And, you know, and then the Diamond Lil paint, you know, the Vargas girl there that's represented on the Diamond Lil, that's not the only new paint on the airplane, right?
No, it's not at all, actually. Some of this was actually I don't know if all your listeners were familiar with the reconfiguration and the original plan back in 2006 and 2007, but we're finally getting caught up with some of those bits and pieces with the Ferry Command logo that's on the back of the airplane that the A models originally had, with the neutrality flag that's on the right side of the aircraft was a good balance in trying to represent that era of aircraft between the Diamond Lil nose art on one side and the heritage of the neutrality flag on the other. So, yeah, it was an attempt to make a good balance in trying to represent this airplane.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know about the neutrality flag. Give us a little. Let's I guess go into the history a little bit of the airplane and why that neutrality flag fits with this airplane.
Well, yeah, this is really a unique bomber because again, she was actually obviously designed prior to the U.S. entering the war, but she was also delivered prior to the U.S. entering the war. So when these early airplanes were operated by the neutral countries, they flew their flag on the side of them to denote that, you know, they're not part of the conflict. So when you see the early models, the early pictures of the A models, you see these big flags on the side of the nose and you see them up on the top of the wings. And that was the intent behind that, to keep the crew and the aircraft safe and out of the conflict. So this is actually era correct for that airplane.
Yeah, and it's a big flag on the nose of the airplane. If you guys haven't seen it, yeah, if folks haven't seen it, you can go to Warbird or Facebook / Warbird Radio and then click on the photos link there. And then I put up a little album with a few pictures. Diamond Lil 2012 is the name of the Warbird Radio photo album there on our Facebook page. And you can see what we're talking about, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about. But it's a big flag. It's, 6 feet tall and 10 feet long or something like that painted on the
airport. It is. And we didn't over-exaggerate the size. The size was meant to not be missed, or no way to possibly mistake that for being any other country involved with conflict. So that is the actual size of a neutrality flag on a B-24A model.
Yeah, and it's great, and that's going to be really popular, I think, at air shows. I can just see, you know, you guys cutting the air show pass. You go one direction, Diamond Lil. You come back the other way, and there's that big flag. I know the photos are going to be everywhere after a few passes after your first air shows with that thing. So it's really cool, and y'all are going to put another flag on it as well, right?
Well, eventually, as time permits, she'll get another flag up on the center wing area, which, again, the A models had one up there as well. And, this actually wasn't done for attention. This was actually done to help make the aircraft error correct for its delivery time.
Yeah, and so tell us about, let's go into a little bit about the history of the airplane. It was built in it's a contract 1940 airplane, right?
Yeah, the contract was actually finalized in 1940, and she was originally in the lot of Liberators that were going to go to France, and obviously France fell before the Liberators were produced, so the order was converted over to the British, and she was actually the 25th Liberator built overall out of the 18,188 plus Liberator airframes that were built, and rolled off the assembly line actually in May of 1941. As the serial number 18 from a production standpoint, which is impressive in itself. Just stopping at that part of the story, you know, her 71 birthday is going to be next month, you know, and she's
right,
with us today.
Yeah, she's number 18 out of what? What, the 18,000 or 14,000? How many
yeah,
B-24?
Over 18,000. Yeah, I've seen that number vary a little bit. It consistently seems to be pretty much be 18,188 Liberators. So that's a lot of them. Yeah, to be serial number 18 says a lot all in itself.
Right. And then, so she was delivered
in May of 1941. And why she was pulled out of the rack for flight crew training, I don't know, but she was. 2 days later, Consolidated Crews actually flew her to Kansas City and handed her over to TWA pilots, which TWA had been contracted for pilot training. And again, you know, these large, heavy bombers, this was a new technology, you know, a new thing at the time. So there was a need for pilot training. And TWA was operating between Kansas City and Albuquerque at the Eagle's Nest Flight Center. And that's where she was taken. And then a month later, in June of 41, is actually when she had a accident on landing. It's like the right brake locked up, and she went off the runway, and the right gear and nose gear collapsed, and that's what caused all the subsequent damage and removal of all the undercarriage of the aircraft. And thankfully, at that time, again, the demand for these type of aircraft was much higher than what could be delivered at the time. So she was thankfully salvaged at that point. So Consolidated came in and made a huge recovery effort. And actually, it took until December of that same year to actually get her ferried back to San Diego to the Consolidated plant. And at this point is when the correspondence between Consolidated and the British Air Ministry started. As far as Consolidated being able to take that airplane and use it to help test and develop the B-24 airframe itself. So they were kind of given the keys to it to do what they needed to do, and it was kind of ironic timing for this airplane to show up and there be talk or a theory of converting the B-24s to a cargo version, I mean, which made sense. It was a large, roomy interior compared to anything else at the time. So there weren't actually any blueprints for the C-87 Liberator Express yet, but there was an idea floating around Consolidated, and they actually used 927. There were some letters from Consolidated that described the program and described what they did and just get into what they're going to do with this airplane. And this was actually the C-87 prototype.
Right. Well, I know when Gary was doing some of the restoration stuff, he pulled up a few floorboards, and there were some. Wasn't there? God, I'm trying to remember, but there was some. I don't remember the numbers now. You may know more than I did. The RWY1 or something like that.
That actually came a little later. That came a little later in her life, actually. Believe it or not, we hadn't even got to that part of it yet. This was just her first modification, and then so that actually developed the blueprints for them to forward to Fort Worth to the Consolidated plant that had been set up there, and then they went into production with the C-87, which again, this is very early on pre-war stuff that we didn't have C-54s, we didn't have the C-46 yet. So I mean, bridged a huge gap. And the logistics that were necessary for World War.
And Consolidated used her as a freight dog somewhat, didn't they? I mean, to haul critical parts and things back and forth between Fort Worth and California?
Yeah, across the U.S., between all the Consolidated plants. She was used to ferry people, ferry equipment, ferry parts, and it went between all the plants. And then, again, the subcontractors. In order to, again, get the production of the Liberator up and going and to get these four other plants up and moving. And again, it moved everything from executive to spare parts across the country. And they even took it a step further in some of the, I guess you'd expect with any new airframe, especially something that was considered somewhat cutting-edge technology at the time, where they had some control surface or controllability issues with Liberator, mainly the pitch. And it's kind of neat to work on Lil when you get inside the tail, for instance. There are pieces and parts in there that will match a D-model parts listing identical. But when you look at the airplane, it almost looks like it was retrofit, like somebody just kind of tried to jerry-rig it and fit it in there with makeshift mounts, or there'll be empty holes. And again, this airplane was used to help work the bugs out of the Liberator. And so these improvements that were put into the later D and H and J models, 927 was part of that.
Right, and it's a little different airplane. I mean, I know that if you put a B-24 and 927 together, there's a couple of little things in there that, you know, I know it's what it's got on it now is a really long nose compared to what the original B-24A had on it. And they took the whole nose out. A lot of people think it's just a plug put in there, but it was a whole nose section from behind the cockpit forward, I think. And then, something, you know, the engine nacelles are round. Original, like PBY, Catalina round, engine nacelles and cowling there, and I know there's one little thing that really people don't notice is that little hump or something in the tail, right ahead of the tail. There's a little swoop, or I don't know what you want to call it there, but B-24 is flat across there, and this B-24A's got a little bit of a hump there, you know. So there's some subtle differences to the airplane, for sure.
Yeah, there really are, and in some of those conversions, like with the PBY nacelles that are actually on the aircraft right now. Came between modifications between 45 and 47, and there were a lot of things that were improved, especially engine upgrades and turbocharger upgrades that, again, came with the D model that the A models never had and that Lil was never delivered with. So in order for sustainment with obsolete A model stuff and the complicated cowl flap system they had, it made sense to convert it over to PBY stuff that was still being produced, and it was very easily attainable and very easy to work with. So it just, again, improved the sustainability of it. And as they developed these things and got into the L and M model Liberator and the RY-3 aircraft, that it made sense to update the nose of the airplane. And that's where, again, from that front bulkhead forward is where the RY-3 comes on. And, yeah, if you look up underneath the rudder pedals under there, it still has the serial number of the RY-3 wherever it was pulled off the production line and put on to Lil in 47.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in the restoration thread on the Wix forum there, that when Gary pulled the floorboards up or whatever and said, hey, look at this, here's some numbers, you know. Little pieces of history like that that you just, it just kind of blow your mind if you really think about what this airplane's been through. So,
yeah, it's really been through a lot. And, I mean, and that was only, what, in the first 5 years of its life to go through that much.
Exactly. So once the World War II was over and once Consolidated got through with it in, what, 47, 48 or something like that? They flew it for quite a while after the war, didn't they?
Well, they actually got full ownership of it in November of 45. The British Air Ministry just gave it back to them. And then that's actually where they subsequently registered it as 24927, which is our end number, our call sign right now for the aircraft. So, again, that came from 1945. It wasn't just created CAF thinking that put that on the airplane. From there, it's kind of another neat story. There's a general named Lucius Clay that had flew 927 during Consolidated's ownership or possession of aircraft, both during and after the war. And when he retired, he went to work for Continental Can Company in Morristown, New Jersey. So when they were ready for a corporate airplane, he reached back to Consolidated and got his 927 back. They had it modified and turned into basically a flying Winnebago with sleeping berths and couches and recliners and a galley and everything else that you could think of or want for a long cross-country trip. And they operated it. Yeah, basically as an executive transport from coast to coast and up through their plants in Canada and all over.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of that interior. I mean, it was the CAF operated it like that with that interior for quite a while. I know it wasn't exact the interior, but the seats were still in there, and some of the soundproofing and you know, some of that kind of stuff in the what was the Bombay area, you know, under the wing there. I remember seeing that. You know, in years past, but
yeah, and it was very impressive. It was quite a deal to go for 2C from a flat floor military transport aircraft to, again, the most luxurious type RV that you can see for its day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so after, let's see, so Continental Can owned it, and then they flew it as their executive aircraft for several years. How long did they own the airplane?
They actually got the airplane in November of 48, and then it was in April of 59 when they actually exported it to Pemex, which was the national oil company in Mexico. And then they continued to use the aircraft basically for the same purpose around Latin America and the United States.
And registration number changed? It went to a Mexican registration then, right?
Well, the registration number had actually changed when Consolidated Can Company took ownership of it. They had their own series of call signs, and they wanted to keep theirs. And then, again, the call sign changed when it was exported to Mexico. It got an X number. And then eventually when the CAF got it, again, they were loaned the airplane in 67 and eventually got full ownership of it in 68. The N number changed back to a U.S. N number. So, yeah, she said, what's it been? If you count the AM927, she's had five different call signs, but it's been changed six different times because we changed it back in 1990 back to the original 24927.
Yeah, and I was wondering when that happened. I don't remember it. I wasn't necessarily paying attention to N numbers at the time, but it did. You guys did get that number back, and then it was in 97 that that changed back?
No, it was actually September 1990 is when that was changed back.
Oh, 90, okay.
It was a smaller...
All right.
Yeah, a small airline in Florida, actually, it ended up with that N number, and the CAF worked on an agreement to swap N numbers. So they gave the 12905 N number the CAF had been using to them, and we took the original 1945 Convair call sign.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool.
for the N number geeks out there, that's a pretty cool deal. I mean, and it's part of the history, which makes it neat. I mean, there's all kinds of things with this airplane, and that's what's cool about it. I mean, you know, it's the oldest, from what I understand, it's the oldest flying four engine airplane in the world right now. And you know, I mean, that in itself is a mind-boggling piece of history. And you know, everybody just sees it as old Diamond Lil, but it's a unique airplane, in the, at least in the of the age of the airplane that's flying. You know, I mean, there's nothing else that big and that old flying around. So I mean, 70 years is a, you know, I remember used to think, you know, when I saw the airplane, oh, that airplane's 40 years old, you know, and you know, that was 30 years ago. So, you know, it was very cool.
Yeah,
very cool. So Pemex owned it
for the event.
Yeah, and Pemex owned it for a long time, and they flew it around Mexico and flew their executives around to it. And then, so, and you were talking the B-20, the CAF squadrons, or the CAF got the airplane on loan from Pemex. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was loaned. That in itself, too, was another neat story in the history of this airplane, because the CAF had been looking for a B-24 since, again, its conception, and as the collection started to grow. And it was a nearly impossible airframe to find out there. And when they did come across that, thanks to Vic Agather, actually, that had heard of the aircraft and had worked with Pemex, and trying to get the aircraft acquired by the CAF, and which was, again, a huge priority for the CAF at the time, because I don't know if you've heard of Lefty Gardner, but he was actually a B-24
sure.
pilot during the war, too. So this was actually important to him as well. And he, as well as Lloyd Nolan, all worked together to acquire the airplane from Pemex. And they did have it on loan for about a year while they did work out a deal, because they did end up, in a sense, having to buy the aircraft. But it took that year to negotiate the deal and to work out the ends of it to try and get a replacement plane for Pemex at the same time the CAF could acquire 927.
Yeah. And what was the arrangement there? I remember you talked about it this weekend a little.
Well, the arrangement is, it turns out, Pemex was wanting to update to a DC-6. And there's a lot of problems that they can't just go out and buy one. So basically, Lefty and Lloyd were going to kind of broker a deal. They were going to find the DC-6, the best one they could for the best price they could. And then Vic Agather coordinated and provided the, I guess, the middleman portion of this to help get the deal through. So Pemex wanted $50,000 for the airplane. And what ended up happening, the CAF brokered the deal for the DC-6, and they got a $10,000 commission for doing the brokering. So they waived their $10,000 commission and gave it to Pemex, and Pemex at the time was still operating two DC-3s. So they had a use for these low-time engines that were on Lil at the time,
okay.
And the value of each of those engines was deemed $10,000. So basically, the CAF would hand over their consignment fee and let Pemex have all four engines, and then the CAF would get Lil. And that's basically how it worked out.
So what a heck of a deal.
It is. And as it turned out, the CAF, they'd been loaned the airplane and had the airplane. The CAF basically found four low-time engines and gave them back to Pemex for their DC-3 fleet. And
right.
As of May of 1968, the official paperwork with the FAA was done, and they owned the B-24.
Yeah, and how long was the paint job? I know the paint on this thing. I know I've seen photographs of Lil in the black, or was it red, white, and blue with the Confederate flag? The CAF markings. It seems like I've seen photographs of her like that, and I guess she was in that paint for long, but.
Well, she was in that paint. Actually, got from Pemex, was actually overall white with a lot of green accents. And, of course, then the CAF markings went on and the flag went on. And it wasn't until, the CAF was working to pay off the note, to clear the engines, And again, it's a lot of the same things we go through today, never enough time or money. So when they did get to a point in 1970 where they were actually ready to put her in combat colors, and again, another neat story with Lil, Lloyd Nolan had reached out to several people and several agencies for input and ideas on what to do with the CAF B-24. And it was everything from the CAF members to the Air Force Historical Foundation, even wrote the Secretary of the Air Force for his input. But how she ended up getting the pink and blue colors of the 98th Bomb Group was actually a letter he had written to General Curtis LeMay, who had actually chosen the bomb group for the CAF B-17. And he had actually handed that decision over to General Edward Timberlake, who, I don't know if you know your B-24 history much, maybe I'm getting down in the weeds on this, but he was actually the one that took the first group of liberators into North Africa and started operating from there, and then eventually out of Italy. And again, part of the famous B-24 stuff that you'll see in that part of the country. And it was actually him that requested that the 98th Bomb Group, the 9th Air Force colors be applied to the airplane. And that was good enough for the CAF, and that's what they moved forward with in 71.
Sure. Cool. All right. We're going to take a quick break here, Don. Stick with me here to the bottom of the hour. And
sure.
Folks, you're listening to Warbird Radio, and we're live on the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. Again, the phone number 478-787-4768. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
St. Adams here from the Wednesday Night Wix Show, here to tell you about the new aviation t-shirts available now at warbirdradio.com/deals. Click on the Wright Brothers catalog link. There are lots of great t-shirts to choose from, like the classic World War II Flying Tigers, Tuskegee Airmen, and the ever-popular P-51 Mustang, as well as many other fun aviation designs. Talk to you next Wednesday evening on the Wix Warbird Weekly Live Show, and hopefully you'll be listening wearing your new Aero-style t-shirt. Visit warbirdradio.com/deals now and check out the all-new Wright Brothers catalog.
Attention aviation and scale modeling enthusiasts worldwide. Hi, I'm Hawkeye, host of the Plastic Scale Modeling Hour. Tune in as we discuss topics related to plastic scale modeling, tips, techniques, products, events, as well as interviews and conversation with our special guests. Listeners will be able to call in with their comments live by phone or using our live chat room. The Plastic Scale Modeling Hour comes your way weekly, every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, here on WarbirdRadio.com.
Hi friends, Matt Jolly here to tell you about a special offer from my friends at Aero Cinema. Just log on to warbirdradio.com/deals and watch for free Aero Cinema's new feature presentation on Scott Yoke's P-51 Quicksilver. Inside you'll find a special Aero Cinema subscription rate that's so good I'm not allowed to say it on the air. So click on warbirdradio.com/deals, that's warbirdradio.com/deals, and watch Quicksilver for free, plus receive that special offer from Aero Cinema. Just remember, warbirdradio.com/deals.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Band Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
If you're landing at DCA, be sure to wave. This is Warbird Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. We're talking here tonight with the B-29, B-24 Squadron Maintenance Officer Don Orbiter, and we're talking about Diamond Lil. This weekend, Diamond Lil got back in her, back in her paint. The 927 paint is the nose art there is gone, and Diamond Lil's back on the airplane. Gary Velasco did the paint job, and they've got the neutrality flag on the other side, the Air Transport Command logos on the tail, or on the waist of the airplane, and she's looking real good, and then she's getting ready to go on the road. And we'll talk to Don here about that here in a minute. Don, you still with us there?
I'm still here.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit. Let's shift gears a little bit here out of the history deal of the airplane. I think we're pretty much up to current times with her, but you know, I know what everybody. everybody wants to know what the future plans are. I know there's long-term big, you know, wish plans for the airplane. You know, the everybody wants to know when you're putting the Bombay back in the airplane. But that's a huge undertaking, and it's going to take a lot of donations, a lot of work, and a lot of downtime for that. What else have you got going immediately for the airplane? I know you guys are getting ready for tour, and tell us a little bit what's going on in the squadron.
Well, I'll tell you the future plans for the airplane, for both airplanes for that matter. We're, I guess, limited by the same things we are in our own life with the amount of time we have and the amount of money we have. And we've all got jobs to do. And it is no different than Will and no different than Fifi. They've got jobs to do, too. So time and assets and manpower limit what we can do. And our immediate future plans, what we're looking at, and within the next year or two, we do want to get the rest of the interior painted, get the top flag on her. Rockwell Collins has been great about some help with radio equipment, so we hope to, over the next year, get the radio operator compartment back up, and not only back up and complete so that everybody can see what it was like to be a radio operator in an A model, but actually it'll be functional. And, of course, there's big things still left from 2007, like the Bombays, for instance, that they're not off the radar, but they're just going to have to be worked in when we can do it, and I don't have any date for you yet on that.
Yeah, and I understand. I mean, that's a huge undertaking. That's like taking the belly of the airplane out, and it's got to be done right, timely, and jigged up just right, and everything else to preserve the integrity of the airplane. So
there's a lot to that, and I guess probably the best way I've tried to describe this over the last few years on why it wasn't done. If it was really that easy to do, I would have thought that Consolidated, who built this thing, would have done it back in 1941. So. Yeah, it's a huge undertaking for us. You know, we've got drawings, we've got the doors themselves. You know, we've got a step forward, we've got the drawings for the jigs. We've got a lot of that stuff trying to get staged and ready, but, you know, it's just another thing that down the road, hopefully we'll have a great Bombay door unveiling someday. One other thing, though, I do want to mention, and that did go on the side of the airplane that we hadn't talked about yet, if we have a minute, is our new honor service campaign that we've got. This is a really neat thing. You know, these airplanes are living memorials to veterans, you know, of all ages, not just World War II. And this Honor Their Service campaign is a way for family members of loved ones, of veterans, to commemorate the sacrifices that they made by basically sponsoring the airplane. And we put the first Honor Their Service name on the side of the airplane during the unveiling, which was Landon Struder. And it's a great program, a great way to honor loved ones. And it goes beyond even veterans. There are a lot of civilians that are involved with the defense of our country, you know, through all ages. So it's not just, it's not limited to World War II air crew members. It's a great program. You can get on our website and click on the icon and gives you the details. And it's definitely a worthwhile cause, and it helps keep loved ones' memories alive and helps keep these airplanes flying.
Yeah, that was a poignant little piece of the ceremony there Saturday with Landon's family there. And folks that don't know, Landon was a wing member with you guys, correct? And he was lost in an airplane crash over in the Middle East. And you know, young guy, family, you know, wife and kid, and the whole ball of wax, and apparently a really super guy. You know, I know his brother's still involved some with the squadron, and you know, was around, but his mom, dad, and wife and kid and everybody were there. That was a little bit of a difficult moment there, Don, to have those guys there.
It was really touching. You know, Landon was the perfect person to start off this program and this campaign to honor their service. You know, he really was a dedicated veteran. He was a dedicated and loving family man. He was very dedicated to the CAF. He was one of our B-24 pilots, and he actually took a term as a squadron leader. So he did. He worked hard for us, and seeing his name go up there, it was very touching. It's very fitting.
Sure, and make sure you know, folks out there visit the B-24. Our CAF B-29B24.org website, and they've got more information there on the on this program. And you know, everybody knows these airplanes need all the money you can get, and you've got a lot of people in the squadron. I mean, how many people are in the squadron there, Don? Do you know?
Right around 400 would be a number that I'd throw out there, give or take.
Well, sure. And how many, and not to put those 400 people on the spot, but how many people do you have, like, on a given weekend that are out there working on the airplane? I know you've got a lot of real dedicated folks. I know you've got some folks, you know, the Rick Jarvis and the Olivers, and there's a gang of people there. I really don't know them all, but you've got a gang of people, men and women, that are there with the B-24, B-29 squadron that are working on the airplane. And how many people you think you have just on a regular basis there?
Well, this is it's amazing how many people it takes to keep these two airplanes operating, and I don't just mean hands-on mechanics and pilots, the people who are out there supporting the tours every weekend in the museum, the people behind the scenes doing the paperwork, the finances, the marketing. It's incredible the amount of volunteer labor hours that it takes for these airplanes. And there's probably an active, I'd say anywhere from a quarter to a third of the squadron members active at some point in this. And again, with most of us being volunteers, most of us having full-time lives and jobs, a lot of this is almost kind of like a relay race where you may take it to one city and then you hand the torch off to the next guy and you go back to work and he carries on the mission. So
sure.
It really varies. Yeah.
Yeah, and
it takes a lot of people.
Yeah, and you've got several. I guess you've got several women that are active in the squadron. You've got spotters in the back of the B-29. You've got B-29 pilots and crew, and you know, it's not just an old guys' club. You know, contrary to
popular
belief,
it's not at all.
It tends to look that way a lot of time.
Yeah, and it goes beyond just you know, men, women involved. There's also it's a family orientated environment, and you know, I don't remember how old my daughter was, you know, when she was climbing down the tunnel with Fifi putting the insulation down inside of her, you know. So it's a very family orientated group, of all ages, all specialties, all backgrounds, all here for the same cause. So there
that's
are
what's
no
really
limitations
cool.
And
That's what's really, to me, has really changed about the CAF. The CAF, I know, has had, and in some places has had a reputation of kind of being the good old boys club and stuff like that. But there's really been a change, I think, in the CAF overall, that it is more, I guess you realize over time that it takes the family of everybody there to make it run. And you know, and you're always looking for volunteers, people to come out and help. And like you said, there's a relay, and there's somebody's got to print the flyers, and somebody's got to be there, you know, every weekend at the Cavanaugh Museum while the airplanes are there to do tours, and somebody's got to be there to unlock the doors and turn on the lights and sweep the floors and everything else. So the kids, you know, you've got junior programs in the CAF, and bring out the whole family, and that's what's, I think, is really cool. And your wing seems to be kind of leading the charge on that, from what I've seen. It just amazes me, and hats off to you guys for getting everybody involved.
Well, I appreciate that, and yeah, there may have been horror stories in the past or whatnot, or derogatory things to say, but since I've been involved with the CAF now, going on almost 10 years, I'm very proud to be part of this organization. It's a great organization, and there's always room for more people. I've never been anywhere or done anything where we've ever had too many people. So even if you want to come out and visit, by all means, come out and see us and see what it's about and see what it takes. And again, it's a great cause.
Yeah, it is. And so what's your tour schedule here? I know you guys are leaving in a couple of weeks. The airplanes will be ready to go. And y'all are headed east to, I think your first stop's what, Andrews Air Force Base?
Yep, Andrews Air Force Base, and we'll make a stop in Lexington, Kentucky, and Maryland, and back up to Morristown, New Jersey, and we'll make the Mid-Atlantic Air Museum stop there in Reading, which is a great place to go if you've never been there. We'll be up in Connecticut and Buffalo and on up into Ontario, eventually down back through to Ypsilanti for the Thunder over Michigan, and Oshkosh. Later in the year, we'll hopefully be in Iowa and Kansas City, so there's a lot going on, and again, the tour schedules for both airplanes are on the website, and it's something to keep up with and check regularly, because it does change a little bit here and there, and there's additions being added continuously, so definitely something to keep up with.
Well, it's exciting. It's first trip for her to Canada in a long, long time, I think. You know, it seems like it was, what, in the 80s or something, maybe the last time she's been?
I would have guessed, I was thinking around 82 or something. It is. It's very exciting to see that.
And hopefully those folks will get the Lancaster back up in the air. And I know they had a little bit of a setback, but it'd be cool to see the B-24 and the Lancaster together. You know, that'd be great. So,
oh, it definitely would be.
Don, I don't know if you want to or not, but tell us a little bit about who's Don Obreiter. You're living in dreaded Altus, Oklahoma, and there's really only one reason to be up there. So yeah, tell us a little bit about you. I mean, you know, I toot your own horn here for a second if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. No, Altus isn't that bad. It's been a great place to raise a family. You just have to be very easily entertained to live here. So, I remember seeing Steffi and Diamond Lil. I think it was in fifth grade, actually, when my dad took me out to see him, and I've been in love with him ever since. And it was because of these two airplanes, actually, that got me interested in airplanes and got me into the aviation industry. And from there, after school, to join the Air Force, I was in one enlistment as a C-141 crew chief. And after I got out, I ended up in Altus here, where all the aircraft maintenance here is... for the Air Force is actually all civilian. So I'm actually been a civilian here for, it's been 16 years now, working 141.
Wow, so you're voluntarily living in Altus. Voluntarily living in Altus. Oh, I understand. Yeah. I'm originally from Lubbock. I know what that part of the world's all about. You know, you've got to have a tolerance for it. But, you know, they're good. And the best thing about that part of the country is there's good people. Even if you are in Oklahoma, there's still good people up there. So,
yeah, there really are. Yeah. And it's worked out fine for me because it was actually close enough to start being involved when little winter maintenance was being done up in Tulsa at the time when I joined the CAF, and so that's not too far away. And the 29 down in Midland, which is, you know, a few hours the other direction, so it's worked out good for me and allowed me a chance to be involved with the squadron and to come back and give back to these two airplanes.
Well, and they're and if you want to see the airplanes here and locally, and if you're in the DFW area, the Kavanaugh Flight Museum's a great place to go, and it's a great addition to have you guys CAF hangar there down the field, and there's a little shuttle bus that'll take you from the main Kavanaugh Museum down to the B-24 B-29 hangar. So come out and see them, but then all the summer, look for them on the road, the B-24 and the B-29 together. They're going to be you are flying most of their stops together with the B-29, correct?
Well, we'll actually have both airplanes out on a lot of the stops. Some of them will be solo, some of them will be together, and again, that's all spelled out on the website.
Sure. Yeah, and that's CAFB29B24.org is the website there. It's a great site. You guys, I know I want to thank you, Don, for I know Chris Trowbridge invited me out Saturday, and I really appreciate you guys letting Warbird Radio come peek in at the Diamond Lil unveiling. That was good fun to be there, and of course we had a little fun with Mr. Pilgrim. Now he had a little retirement party there. And Brad, if you're not on the road and you're listening, hello and congratulations to you, and thank you for, you know, it's 20 years of service with Uncle Sam are done, and he's moving on to greener pastures for sure. But that was good fun, and I really appreciate CAF inviting us out and letting us, me and the wife, be out there hanging out with you guys Saturday. It was good fun.
Well, I'm definitely glad you could make it. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to get on the air with you tonight. I've enjoyed it.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Don. I know you've got things to do and family to keep up with, and I'm going to close out here at the show. I've got a few other things to, a little thought of the day and some things to talk about, but I really appreciate you being on, and you are welcome back anytime, Don. If you've got some news or something and you want to call in on a Wednesday night, just give us a holler. We'll take you guys on the air anytime. And we're glad to hawk your tour. And everybody out there across the nation, go see Fifi and Diamond Lil on the road. And maybe see Dawn or Brighter on the road, too. So enjoy your summer, Dawn, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Again, thank you. And take care.
All right. Thanks, Don. That was Don Obreiter with the CAF B-29, B-24 Squadron. It's great to have him on tonight. And just want to wrap up here, final few minutes of the show. I know it's been a crazy week in air show and old airplane land with the, you know, there's some legislative action out there that is threatened or has been threatened in the last couple of days that puts the risk to warbirds in some ways. And, you know, the CAF is and the Collings Foundation really jumped on the bandwagon. And I think all our friends at Warbird Radio and across the country that jumped in there and you know, talk to your legislators and let them know how important this flying living history is with these warbirds. And that's what we're here for, is to, you know, hear Warbird Radio. Well, you know, we do a lot of talk about it, but that's what we're here for. Be it the Doolittle reunion that happened last week or 2 weeks ago, and the B-29, the B-24, you know, all of these organizations. There's lots of these airplanes flying out there around the country, and it's amazing every time one of these airplanes is around, shows up at an air show or an event or a tour stop. The veterans come out, the veterans of World War II. Which are going fast. The veterans of Korea, which are going fast as well. They're leaving us in droves, you know, and it's part of life, but that's the truth. And the Vietnam vets are out there. They're showing up at these events and seeing these airplanes. And it brings these guys, these veterans, these men and women, it brings them to life. They will talk about things in front of the airplane that you can't see or can't hear them talk about anywhere else. And that's what we're here for. And so be vigilant, you know, save these airplanes in this condition, these flying conditions, as much as we can for the future generations. You know, my son is 20 years old. He recently took his first Warbird flight, and it really opened his eyes. It really opens his eyes to see these airplanes moving. Yeah, you see them in a museum. You walk around them if they're static. The Air Force Museum, the Navy's museum in Pensacola. You know, there's museums all over the country that has these airplanes sitting there, and they're beautiful airplanes and they're historic airplanes in their own right. But there's nothing like hearing one of these airplanes run, hearing them start up, you know, seeing them run, seeing them fly. These airplanes are important to our history, and we should not forget. And it goes all the way up to the modern day airplanes. This stuff, the Vietnam Heritage Flight that the Collings Foundation does, is important because these Vietnam veterans deserve their due, and they fought just as hard as anybody else in this nation for us and for our nation and for freedom, and you know, they're getting to be the next generation of the old veterans around, and it's important for these guys to see these aircraft flying and bring the kids out to the airport and see them flying, see the old guys you know, come to terms with these airplanes, bring it to the fore for them. So it's important. Let your legislatures know. And that's my soapbox for tonight. So we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday on the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. We've got some great shows planned. Got some good stuff coming up here in the next few weeks. Got some good guests coming. And we appreciate you being here with us. And if you're hearing us on the podcast, thanks for downloading it. And we will see you next week. Good night.